This is Encounter on VOA. Here's Carol Castillo.
Welcome to Encounter on the Voice of America on this U.S. politics edition of the program.
The Honorable Kevin McCarthy of the state of California, having received a majority of the votes cast, is duly elected Speaker of the House of Representatives.
That was House Clerk Cheryl Johnson announcing that after a historic 15 rounds of voting, California Republican Kevin McCarthy finally won a majority of the votes to be Speaker of the House of Representatives. It was the first time in more than 150 years that it took more than one round of voting to elect a speaker. In exchange for the gavel, McCarthy made numerous concessions to a group of right-wing hardliners, which analysts say raises questions about his authority and the party's ability to govern. Nonetheless, in his acceptance speech, Speaker McCarthy made it clear that his main priority would be to check President Joe Biden's power.
Our system is built on checks and balances. It's time for us to be a check and provide some balance to the president's policies.
However, Speaker McCarthy did underscore one area of mutual interest between Democrats and Republicans, the need to inhibit the rise of an authoritarian China.
As for the Chinese Communist Party, we will create a bipartisan select committee on China to investigate how to bring back the hundreds of thousands of jobs that went to China, and then we will win this economic competition. Now, speaking of committees, we will hold the swamp accountable. From the withdrawal of Afghanistan to the origins of COVID and to the weaponization of the FBI. Let me be very clear. We will use the power of the purse and the power of the subpoena to get the job done.
As you heard in this Kevin McCarthy soundbite, China may be the only area of convergence between the slim Republican majority and the House Democrats. He made it very clear that oversight will take precedence over legislation. After pushing through an overhaul of operating rules for the new Congress, Republicans created a select subcommittee to investigate the so-called weaponization of the federal government. According to Axios, it is considered to be one of the House GOP's vehicles for reviewing ongoing criminal investigations by the Department of Justice, information gathering tactics of agencies like the FBI, and big tech's relationship with the federal government. The new House Minority Leader, Representative Hakeem Jeffries from the state of New York, had this to say regarding priorities for Democrats.
Let us continue to fight in this Congress to defend democracy. Let us continue to fight in this Congress to put and protect the public interest. Let us continue to fight in this Congress for economic opportunity in every single zip code. And let us continue to fight in this Congress for reproductive freedom.
House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries. In contrast, Republicans used their new power in the House of Representatives last week to push through anti-abortion legislation that could subject doctors to criminal penalties. For analysis on the majority's legislative agenda for the 118th Congress and challenges ahead for newly elected Speaker Kevin McCarthy, we turn to our regular duo. John Fortier is political scientist and resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler. He is Executive Vice President for Policy at Third Way, and they join me as always via Microsoft Teams. Gentlemen, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Carol.
Great to be here.
Let's start with you, John Fortier. A lot of people say that Kevin McCarthy sort of crawled to victory and asking at what price, is this a Pyrrhic victory? Talk about what we just witnessed in terms of how many votes it took him to attain the speakership. How do you see this?
Well, it certainly was dramatic. There's not much that can compare to this in recent history. You know, I think it all started, as we've talked about before, with Republicans underperforming in the midterm election and having a narrow majority. In many ways, I think Kevin McCarthy had done a pretty good job with a diverse caucus of shoring up many conservatives, many parts of his moderate caucus. But with a slim majority where they could only lose 4 votes, that meant that a few members digging in could ultimately force difficulties for McCarthy. We didn't realize it would go as far as it did. So the small number caused a slightly larger number to rebel against McCarthy. Other speakers have had problems before, but have been able to either resolve their problems before we get to the floor of the House or leave, like Newt Gingrich did. But, you know, ultimately we had this very dramatic battle of multiple ballots, slightly changing priorities, but ultimately sliding to Kevin McCarthy in the middle of the night, where he now has become speaker with the requisite number of votes in his conference. Kevin McCarthy had made some concessions to the Freedom Caucus, the more right-wing part of the Republican caucus, prior to these changes, but then there were more changes made. And there is a question of, does he have the power as speaker to do things that other speakers would have? The one big point that many people point to is that it is a little easier because of the rules for there to be a vote to remove the speaker in the middle of a Congress. I'm not sure that will happen, but there will be pressure on him. And these pressures of having a very small majority might not go away when we come to big issues like the debt ceiling or perhaps funding regular appropriations for the government. Look, I think at the end of the day, Kevin McCarthy did come through and was able to turn the tide. Some of the changes that these rebel members were asking for are actually arguably good things for the House of Representatives, or at least increase the transparency and allow the average member to do more. Some of that was the question. But it shows, again, I think, his narrow majority, and it shows it in a very dramatic way.
So turning to you, Jim Kessler, I know you bet from the beginning that Kevin McCarthy probably would not make it, and it looked like he wouldn't. You know, it took a long, long time. So your take on that process, and also, what is your assessment of the concessions he had to make to extremists to really gain the gavel, and how weak will this render him?
Well, Carol, I was right for 14 rounds, but I got it wrong in the 15th round. There's the old adage that I think House Republicans are going to have here, which is you don't get a second chance to make a first impression. And I think, as John Fortier was saying, like, it was very dramatic, you know, this race, and we watched it unfold on television, on C-SPAN. But I also think it was pretty damaging. A speaker, when they're effective, they're usually either loved by their caucus or they're feared by their caucus. And I don't think Kevin McCarthy is either loved or feared. And that makes him a very weak speaker, not just the tiny majority that he got there. And if you look at the critics on the far right who really kept McCarthy from winning this outright early on, you know, there's the feeling that, like, he's not a true conservative. He's not a true believer. He's part of the Washington swamp. He's a bit of a weather vane. He's kind of a phony. He's a backslapper. And here's the problem. It's kind of true with him. So he is leading a caucus in which there's a large number of people who don't really trust him to do the right thing. And in order to win the vote, he had to make all sorts of concessions that cabin him off from the instincts that people think that he has. So this is going to be an interesting 2 years. You know, the question for this Republican House is, will they be able to get anything done that actually matters for the American people? And when they're doing these investigations, they're going to be doing a lot of investigations of President Biden and others. Will they feel credible considering where they're coming from?
Indeed. Well, back to you, John Fortier, and back to the fact that Mr. McCarthy made many, many concessions to what many consider are very hardline right-wing members, some of whom, you know, have rather dubious backgrounds. Marjorie Taylor Greene, who was a QAnon follower. We have Andy Biggs. We have people like Matt Gaetz, who has a questionable background. And in terms of what Jim said, what can actually be done that really matters? Not that investigations aren't important or oversight, but in terms of the debt ceiling that you referred to, that'll be a very big challenge because many in the party, and particularly these right-wing hardliners, may want to do a showdown. And of course, we know that here in the United States, it's important to raise the debt ceiling. It wasn't able to be done in the lame duck session. For example, what do you think will happen? Will someone vote to vacate the speaker, given that the rules package allows for that? What are your thoughts when it comes to a big policy or major legislation like that?
Well, look, I think the position that Republicans are in mitigates some of these issues. They control one part of the Congress. They don't control the presidency or the Senate. And I think it's unlikely that we're going to see big compromise legislation between the parties. So I think the more difficult position, of course, would be a narrow House trying to help their Republican president get a big legislative package through. That would be very difficult. But I think you will see investigations, and I wouldn't minimize that. I mean, it's easy for Democrats to say, oh, they're all going to be political investigations. The flip side of that is when Democrats are in charge of all the branches, they're not looking at their own president and their own administration and the set of issues that Republicans want to look at as carefully. And so, you know, I think that'll be an important part of this Congress. The two areas where the votes may be necessary to do things that are difficult are raising the debt ceiling, as you mentioned, and then ultimately sort of passing regular appropriations to keep the government running. And, you know, I expect we will have strong fights about both of those. You're right. At the end of the day, we're going to have to raise the debt ceiling because we've already promised to borrow a certain amount of money. And I think Republicans want, or some Republicans want, to use that as leverage for some concessions. And they may get some, but it's a very blunt tool, one which nobody wants to exercise. So I think that could cause some significant problems for Republicans. In the appropriations process, we're likely to see a very messy set of appropriations where we might have small government shutdowns temporary. But at the end of the day, Republicans are in those places going to be able to represent their values, and they want to be able to be more strong in their negotiations with Democrats about lesser spending, about certain priorities. As I said, though, I think leverage at the end of the day is very difficult because the consequences of the debt ceiling raise is very, very dire if we were not to do that. But again, I think that's where you'll see the pressure points. Will that be a bad message for Republicans to be putting forward their priorities, generally speaking, and going into the next election? I'm not sure that it will. And will Republicans remove Kevin McCarthy? I think the odds are they won't. But he is under a much shorter leash than a typical speaker or than Nancy Pelosi was because of the rules where, theoretically, there could be another vote to remove him as speaker during these 2 years.
Jim Kessler, there's no question that investigation is important. And I agree with John Fortier. I'm sure many Democrats would be interested in investigating the withdrawal from Afghanistan, which is one of the investigations that is planned for. Nonetheless, the question of raising the debt ceiling here in the United States is very important and could be a critical pivotal point, in addition to, of course, funding the federal government. So my question to you is, how do you think this is going to play out? Will there be a handful of moderate Republicans that would work with the Democrats in the House? How do you see this playing out? Will they be able to compensate for the more extreme wing, or will that trigger maybe a vote to vacate the speaker? What are your thoughts?
In my crystal ball, I believe that Congress will pass a debt ceiling increase before we reach the point where there's a financial disaster. And I believe it'll happen with negotiations between the president, Democratic leader Chuck Schumer, majority leader in the Senate, the Republican leader Mitch McConnell, who's the minority leader in the South, and perhaps Hakeem Jeffries, who's the Democratic leader and the minority leader in the House, and without Kevin McCarthy. I expect these negotiations to happen without him, and that a deal will be made and he will be asked to take it, because that caucus is not willing to do a deal unless there are really significant cuts made in what's called mandatory spending entitlement programs. And that includes possibly Social Security and certainly Medicare and Medicaid. And I don't think Mitch McConnell wants to do that. He doesn't want to breach the debt ceiling. He's willing to have that debate at a later time. And the issue will be, Kevin McCarthy will be trying to save his job as speaker. Will he be jeopardizing Americans' jobs if we breach the debt ceiling? So I think this gets done with McCarthy put on the sidelines, which is ironic, given that he is the Speaker of the House and really controls that chamber. But that's what I see happening.
And that wouldn't necessarily, the fact that he would be sidelined and it could get done, it wouldn't trigger some kind of a motion to vacate by his extremist wing?
Possibly.
Okay, I guess we'll wait and see.
I do think that that is the next time you are going to see the possibility of a movement to take Kevin McCarthy out as Speaker will be over the debt ceiling, because House Republicans are not going to get nearly enough of what they want in a bill to raise the debt ceiling.
You are listening to Encounter on the Voice of America. Our guests are John Fortier, resident scholar at the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, from whom you just heard, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. And we're discussing the nature and direction of the Republican-controlled 118th Congress. This is a reminder that our Encounter podcast is available on most of your favorite podcast apps. You may also download the show from the webpage, voaafrica.com/encounter. You may also follow us on Twitter @Carol_Castiel, or connect with us on Facebook @Current Affairs. with Carol Castiel. Now, here's a shout out to a new Facebook fan, Alicia Klein from South Africa. If you want to hear your name and home country on the air, please send an email to encounter@voanews.com or like us and leave a comment on our Facebook page. Back to you, John Fortier. You know, at this time of year, we always talk about the legislative agenda of the new Congress. So do you see one, or is it mostly investigations, oversight, and perhaps defunding or attempting to not make appropriations for the functioning of the federal government?
I think one interesting area, which is in the area of oversight, but I think it covers greater policy, which Kevin McCarthy, I think, attempted to put an olive branch out to the other side, is that there's a new subcommittee investigating China. And here, I think we do have some bipartisanship that really has arisen in the last 5-10 years, where both parties may have slightly different problems with China, but it's not a very popular thing in America and politics on either side of the aisle to stand up and say, you know, you're pro-China. And so I think there's a possibility of really doing some oversight, some looking, some investigation as to what America is going to do in the near future. As for big legislative priorities, we shouldn't expect that there will be big legislative agreement between the parties in divided government going into an election as we go into 2024. So I don't expect we're going to see big changes in that regard. Look, I think the issue of spending is one that Republicans have come back to. Their tools are very blunt. And I agree with Jim that it's very difficult and dangerous to use the debt ceiling as a tool, and also slightly less dangerous, but also perilous to think about shutting down the government ultimately if they don't get their way. But I think there are some real questions that Republicans are going to raise. And when we're talking about inflation, which is still a real problem, there perhaps is some better news. The idea that our government is spending still at very, very high deficit levels while our Federal Reserve is trying to cut down on inflation, I think that's not a sensible policy. And so thinking about ways in which we're going to be more responsible fiscally is something Republicans have really emphasized, both in the farther right wings of their caucus, but I think that has support across the caucus from left to right of the Republican caucus.
So, Jim Kessler, no question, there is some common ground on China, as I mentioned even in the introduction, and a very respected Republican member of Congress, Mike Gallagher, will be heading up that subcommittee. But what about the interest in investigations and oversight? As I mentioned, also, there's going to be a new committee on the weaponization of the federal government. And some critics are concerned because they wonder, what is the real purpose of such a committee? Because investigating, for example, the Department of Justice, some of the very members of the House Republican caucus who want to investigate, for example, the Department of Justice are under investigation. So what are your thoughts regarding that new subcommittee? What's really underneath that?
Yeah, that's an excellent question, because John Fortier pointed out, you know, when you're in the majority in Congress and you have the White House as well, that there's a very light touch on oversight. It's too light of a touch. The question for this Republican House and these committees, and particularly the weaponization of the federal government, which is a bizarre name, which makes me believe that this is really more about posturing and showmanship, is, are you looking out truly for American interests and trying to make the government better or more responsive? Or are you just trying to make a point? Are you just trying to pose and be performative and get a lot of likes on Twitter and on cable news? And it really feels like this investigative panel falls into the latter. It just feels like it's buying into a lot of conspiracy theories. And it would be great, actually, if this panel was doing true oversight. And on the Democratic side, they should be doing more oversight as well. So I don't have a ton of confidence on this. On the point that you mentioned earlier, I've talked to a lot of Democrats in Congress, and some believe that nothing is going to get done, and some believe that a fair amount can get done. Those that believe nothing is going to get done are all in the House of Representatives, and those that believe that something can get done are all in the United States Senate. And what I expect that we'll see happening is the Senate, for the last several years, has been a highly functioning body, has passed a lot of bipartisan legislation, has really exceeded expectation, and I expect that that is going to continue. Whether the House becomes a graveyard for those bipartisan deals, remains to be seen. But as the Congress progresses, there becomes a greater pressure to let's get something to the finish line. So I think it's too early to say whether this entire Congress will be completely dysfunctional or get something done.
Turning back to you, John Fortier, just picking up quickly on this new committee called the weaponization of the federal government. It does have a call that in journalism, and that's a leading word. Anyway, the point is it's the committee to investigate the investigators, you know, use subpoena power. But as Jim Kessler said, there is this undertone of conspiracy, you know, over the so-called deep state, as some Republicans call the federal bureaucracy, which is a derogatory term, not to say that the federal government is perfect by no means. And as Jim said, investigation and oversight is very important, but it's how it's done and for what reason. Are you concerned that this is more about showboating and getting on Fox News, which is the right-wing cable channel? What is this all about, this committee here?
Look, I think sometimes we can be shocked that there's politics in some of these things. There's going to be politics in these committees. There's going to be a majority and a minority and people bringing up their political points. So it's not as if we're going to shut off one view or the other. Republicans certainly could overdo it. When we talk about the deep state, I think that's going too far. But there's some real legitimate questions about the use of governmental power in the Justice Department and in the intelligence agencies. There is also real questions that Republicans have about social media companies, but also the government influence on social media. And there's been a divide between Democrats and Republicans, with Democrats really making a push to private companies, maybe with some push from government, would be more willing to cut back on misinformation, which I think Republicans often see that as a way of stifling some of their voices. And so these are real issues. I think that issue in particular is one that many conservatives outside of Washington, about Republican voters in the country, feel and at least want to see what's being done about it. And the other question, too, is, of course, the federal government is in the Justice Department, while independent in a certain way, is under the administration of Joe Biden, the president, as it will always be under a president. And there are investigations going on of Donald Trump and other conservative members. And, you know, it's a very difficult thing for the government to investigate a potential candidate of the other side. And we see Donald Trump certainly being under investigation for a number of things, including the production of some documents that he was supposed to have given back to the government when leaving. We now see a story beginning, and it's not clear that it's all comparable, but that there are documents that came out of the Biden time in the vice presidency and that he shouldn't have had. And so there really is going to be a question of, well, is the Justice Department treating these things fairly? What is the fair amount? And I think for Republicans, being in the minority, being out of the executive branch, in a sense, being able to shine a light on these things, I think they're A, important, B, things that their voters care about. Sure, there's a possibility of some overreach, but they're not illegitimate issues.
John Fortier, no question, we just have this development this week about some classified documents that were found in what was former Vice President Biden's office. Many analysts are saying that unlike former President Donald Trump, who allegedly obstructed efforts to recover hundreds of classified documents, the handful of documents that were reportedly found at the Biden Center and somewhere else were immediately sent to the National Archives. But that will be litigated and discussed in the weeks and months ahead. But Jim Kessler, you get the last word, and certainly I expect you to weigh in on whether or not you think that, for example, some of the more moderate Republicans in the House of Representatives, will Kevin McCarthy reach out to them because he knows he won't get cooperation from his extreme right, or will that spell his removal?
I don't have high hopes for the moderate Republicans in the House. They've really, I'd say, underperformed in the last several Congresses, and they've really shown an unwillingness to buck their leadership to move the party in a more centrist direction, the way the far right has bucked their leadership and has moved the party in a much more far right direction. And, you know, as evidence, the speaker got his votes on the 15th round, but the next thing was the rule package, which had the concessions that all the far right conservatives won. Well, that rule package could have been stopped by the moderates, and they didn't. So I expect they're going to fall short. Biden has a bit of an advantage, and Democrats have a bit of an advantage in the next couple of years, in that they passed so much in the first 2 years that there isn't really too much that they need to do to say, we fulfilled our promise of what Joe Biden said he was going to do when he got elected president. Really, these next 2 years are about the implementation of the infrastructure bill, the CHIPS Act, the Inflation Reduction Act. And, you know, we just had a good report on inflation today. If inflation goes down, if the economy remains strong, and if nothing crazy happens like breaching of the debt ceiling, I hate to use this term, but Democrats can coast a little bit and rest on the accomplishments that they had in the first 2 years, many of them bipartisan, and, you know, for them, hopefully a better economy. Then they can try and make some deals on maybe border enforcement, some other areas where there's vulnerabilities, and see if Republicans will go with those deals or if they back out.
On that note, that's all the time we have on this politics edition of Encounter. I'd like to thank my guests, John Fortier, resident fellow with the American Enterprise Institute, and Jim Kessler, executive vice president for policy at Third Way. Gentlemen, once again, thanks for a terrific conversation.
Thank you.
Encounter was produced in Washington with technical assistance from Rick Pantaleo. I'm Carol Castiel. Join me again next week for a Latin American-focused edition of Encounter on the Voice of America.